In this first afternoon session, we'll continue with mindfulness of thoughts and emotions, and we'll add one piece in the instructions and then a little bit later, and that is to give some special focus on what we might call difficult thoughts and emotions, which may or may not arise in the session. I'll do a guided practice right at the end where we more deliberately go into something of moderate level difficulty. So just a few words of instruction, and the instructions will be particularly focused on mindfulness during our formal practice. And then after our silent sitting session, we'll give a little more attention to working more generally in different contexts. It's a huge subject as to how we work with difficult thoughts and emotions in relationship with others. It brings in the complexity of a second or more minds, right? Which is a lot. So we're focusing mostly on working with our own experience here, but we'll bring in some more later. I thought I'd give a readings from the 7th and about the 12th centuries to show that people had difficult thoughts and emotions then too. That there's some constants in human experience. And the first is from Shantideva from the 8th century. And he uses the metaphor of a wild elephant. You know, each culture will have its images of difficult thoughts and emotions. For him, it was a wild elephant. A crazy, untamed elephant in this world cannot inflict such harm as the sufferings of the deepest hell caused by the rampaging elephant of the mind. And then a poem a few centuries later. Some of you, I think, know this probably. This is from Hafiz, the Persian poet. He wrote the poem To Build a Swing. And I'll read excerpts from this. You carry all the ingredients. You carry all the ingredients to turn your life into a nightmare. Don't mix them. You have all the genius to build a swing in your backyard for God. That sounds like a hell of a lot more fun. Let's start laughing, drawing up blueprints, gathering our talented friends. I will help you with my divine lyre and drum. Hafiz will sing 1,000 words you can take into your hands, like golden saws, silver hammers, polished teakwood, strong silk rope. You carry all the ingredients to turn your existence into joy. Mix them, mix them. The instructions, the added instructions for working with difficult thoughts and emotions build on what we've done before. That is, we still want to work very much with noting what's happening in daily life, in the flow of daily life, when a difficult thought or emotion comes up, extremely helpful just to note that it's happening, right? Because again, the mindfulness, as I mentioned earlier, you know, when we notice a difficult experience after 5 minutes, the mindfulness reminds us that we can actually be responsive rather than simply be carried along by whatever is occurring. And so the noting, the mindfulness is crucial. It tells us this is happening. Even if we're 90% in the grip and have 10% of mindfulness, the 10% can change things. Kind of like a theory of social change. You know, I think there were studies at Stanford that showed that a lot of the great social movements and revolutions in history when there's been very dedicated 4 to 7%, it changes things. So, as with social change, so with our minds. And there, we can, again, feel like it's very, this very, very strong, the difficult experience, but there is mindfulness, say 5 or 10%. Having that, we can actually let that 10% be a pivot and very soon shift so it's 50-50 and even less. So the mindfulness is key. The noting of the difficult experience. Again, using a label just to say, oh, there's anger, or there's, I'm going into my negative scenario or my scary scenario. And just to know that, it can help us summon the resources to respond skillfully. I think in our Sunday group here, we've also sometimes done a more detailed way of working with the second form of mindfulness, which I gave in the morning, which was that I called exploring. And we may know this model called RAIN, R-A-I-N, which is widely used in the insight meditation world. I think it was developed by Michelle McDonald Smith, who used to teach her more often. She's an old friend. When I was first practicing, she was on the staff at Insight Meditation Society. And anyone know Michelle? Yeah. Yeah, she's a wonderful teacher. For a long time, she would teach in the 1980s, she would teach the three-month retreat, and she would be the person who people went to when they were having especially difficult emotions, and she was the most skillful of the teachers around that. And she developed this model called RAIN, very simple. The R stands for recognition, that would be the noting. The A stands for acceptance, in the sense of acceptance we had earlier, that this is happening. In other words, non-resistance. It's happening, let me be with it. Let me, in a sense, allow it to be there, not to resist it or try to make it go away. And again, that's when it's in the workable range. When things are not in the workable range, when it's taken us away, then we actually don't go into acceptance. We go into, let me come back to balance. Crucial distinction, sometimes hard to know. I found even with very experienced meditators, sometimes it's hard to know, am I really being mindful or does this have me caught, right? But generally, we want to use mindfulness when it's workable. When it's not workable, we want to come back, as it were, to workability, to balance. So the A stands for acceptance, that it's here. Again, non-resistance, allowing, are synonyms, we might say. And the I in RAIN stands for the investigation. It could stand for interest, inquiry, the curiosity. Curiosity is such a great factor for our practice, to really have interest in what's happening, to be really interested in how our minds work, and even in our bad habits. Oh, let me have deep interest in my bad habits. It's actually crucial, right? And it actually could mark a turning point, because when we're interested in our bad habits, it means that they don't have as much hold on us, and we don't have to be reactive. In a way, when we're reacting, say, I don't want my bad habits, they still have us. To get that, it's interesting, right? And when we actually can have them be there without reacting so much, it actually marks a point where they have much less power. So it's quite interesting. It's an interesting psychology, isn't it? And so the I stands for investigation, connected with interest, curiosity. And the N stands for non-identification. We could say it means looking at the phenomena as if you're a naturalist in the wild, observing some strange and unusual creature called my mind. So... and again, when we experience retreats, we can sometimes really be there for an extended period of time with the same pattern. Something can be quite strong. And I know for me, it's been very valuable, over the course of a lot of years to have periods in which fear was dominant for an extended time, or anger, or self-judgment or sadness, you know, and to have extended times really looking into the dynamics of these difficult emotions changes everything. We can do that in our individual sittings as well when they come up. Something may come up, just something triggered, some difficult interaction yesterday, and I'm in my irritation mode or my blaming and judging mode or whatever. And we want to look at that. And the investigation, again, a helpful way to have the sense of investigation is to partly use the mind to say, to ask questions like, what's it like in the body? To really explore in the body. Just to ask that simple question, what's it like in the body? And not so much to try to write a report, but just mostly to feel it. What's it like? But some words can be helpful. You know, my chest is caving in some, you know, or whatever, or my hands are tight. Just to remember that can be very, very helpful. What's it like in the body? What's the storyline? What's the narrative? Extremely helpful when we study these, as I mentioned earlier, we study these and we know here's the typical storyline that arises when this occurs. Tremendously valuable to know that. Again, for our mindfulness, so we can, as it were, have radar that looks out for that storyline. Storyline comes up. Normally, it would just say, here, I have a nice story for you. It's completely true. Wouldn't you like to live within this story for the next half hour? Right? And it comes in this almost seductive way, and we fall for it, as it were. And when we practice the mindfulness, we say, oh, look at that, I'm going into that storyline. Oh, I'm going there again. Oh, I'm going there again. And we can notice it and really track it. And something, there's a very important function of repetition in practice, of seeing something over and over again. It would be very nice if we were the kind of creatures that you just see something once or twice, going, I got it. Does anyone have a mind like that? Sometimes. I have found that it works like that for the most superficial things. Sometimes I see something that has very little importance, but I'm a little bit caught. I notice it. Okay, don't need to do that. But the big ones, in my experience, partly because they've mostly been repeated like, you know, 200,000 times, and the neural pathways are, as we would say, well-developed, right? And then we have to notice it over and over again. And, that, you know, it actually can be helpful to have the sense that we're building new neural pathways, you know, whereas a particular stimulus would trigger going down this neural pathway. That's what habits are, right? That's what typical triggers are. What we're doing with mindfulness is we're building alternative neural pathways. So something gets triggered, and I don't go in the same way. I go into awareness, and then maybe I go into a different response. And we have to, and every time that I'm with use mindfulness with that old pattern, something new is being developed. Yeah. And it takes time for the deepest ones. So that model of rain is very helpful. And the other short guidance I want to give for difficult emotions is related in a way to the instructions in the ancient text on mindfulness. Some of you know that it's in the third foundation of mindfulness that we develop mindfulness more or less of thoughts and emotions. And the instructions in the text start by saying, really be aware when there's greed, hatred, or delusion. And we can translate that and say, have your radar up for any moment of reactivity. And reactivity comes in two main forms, the compulsive pushing away, which could manifest in irritation, anger, you know, judgment, etc., and the compulsive grabbing hold. We mean by reactivity those two forms especially. And we can be on the lookout for that because virtually all difficult emotions or thoughts are going to be reactive ones. And so we can really be on the lookout for that, for those moments of reactivity. And when they occur, just be with them, notice them. Generally, that guidance requires a little more quiet mind. But that can be helpful. You know, if your mind is somewhat stable and you're not necessarily having difficult thoughts and emotions, you can work on a more subtle level by saying, let me be on the lookout for any moment of reactivity. It could be a small one. It could be just like, I'm feeling some sensation in my shoulder and I'm tensing around it. I'm reacting, or I'm saying, you know, I should do more yoga, or whatever it is. Some could be judgment, blaming. Be on the lookout for that and study it. That's actually could be the only instruction that a teacher would give for the entirety of one's life. You follow that instruction, track any moments of reactivity and study them. It takes one a very, very long way. Yeah. So let's sit now.